and thanks for downloading our program, Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries. Our goal is to help you become better stewards of the gifts that God has given you. You can learn more how we can help you by going to compasscatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and today we're doing something a little bit different. Evelyn is off on a retreat, so it's just John Bean and myself. John is the co-founder of Compass Catholic Ministries, and over the years, we get asked many questions over and over and over regarding having a financial advisor or planner. So we thought, let's sit down with one and pass these questions on to him. Well, his name is John F. Kennedy, and he is the co-founder of Candor Path here in Central Florida. And John and I sat down with John about the importance of seeking advice. In fact, in our Bible study, Faith and Money Matters, one of the topics that we discuss is the importance of seeking godly counsel.
That's right, Steve. And what we wanted to do today with John is kind of seek counsel to see what really is a financial planner or a financial advisor, or what's a broker, and just kind of seek counsel about how do you go about finding one, how do you pick one, all those kinds of things. So, John, can you tell us what is a financial planner?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, by the way. I'm excited to be on the show. So I think there's a number of different ways to define a financial planner or a financial advisor. To me, a financial planner, though, is somebody who helps clients be good stewards of their resources and ultimately help them pursue their passion. It's interesting because there's an alphabet soup of different types of designations that one can get. The certified financial planner is certainly one of the big ones. But in any of these designations, and I can provide a copy of a list of these different designations for you, but in any of them, above all else, I think the most important thing is, are they a fiduciary? Right? I mean, are they?
So, and what does a fiduciary mean?
Well, by definition, a fiduciary duty is the highest standard of care. It entails always acting in your beneficiary's best interest, even if doing so is contrary to yours. And I think, in my opinion, what that ultimately leads to is having undivided loyalty, full and fair disclosure, and not being misleading and avoiding conflicts of interest in working with somebody.
Okay. A planner or an advisor, basically, they're the same thing. You got a financial planner, you got a financial advisor. What's a broker?
That's a good question. That's kind of a bit of a dinosaur in our industry. I think many years ago, probably 20 or 30 years ago, the planning industry was born out of probably the insurance and the broker industry. You had two very definitive paths, let's say back in the 80s and 90s, right? You could be insurance broker, you could be a securities broker. In time, I think people realized, well, I really want to work with somebody who's not necessarily a broker selling a specific product or something like that, but work with someone who's ultimately just providing me advice and an objective opinion to help me prepare for my financial life. So I think that's probably the difference. A broker typically just takes action based on what you tell them. If I want to buy or sell something, let's say. But a financial planner is somebody who really should be helping holistically for someone's financial life. And that could mean many things. That doesn't have to be on the investment side. That could be tax planning. That could be insurance or estate or cash flow management, things like that. There's a number of things that you want to look into when you're interviewing advisors. Or when you're ready to hire one, I think the first might be going to brokercheck.org. You know, you can see there who they're affiliated with, their experience in the industry. You ultimately, this is silly and probably, you know, everyone knows this, but you maybe even just want to ask, are you a fiduciary? Are you on my side if we're working together? And also, you know, you want to find out things like how do they charge, what are their certifications, and so on.
John, I mean, the question that we get a lot when we talk about financial planner or advisor, the comeback is, well, I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a minimum that you have to have before you seek a financial advisor?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the short answer is anytime's a good time to seek a financial advisor, whether you're in your late 20s or you're in your early 60s.
So what do you tell someone who says, well, I enjoy doing that at home. I like doing that. I like to dabble in finances. Yeah. I mean, is that smart? Is the individual missing something?
I think it's specific to that person. I mean, if that's what they enjoy and they like doing that, we work with many different types of clients that do what you just described, and that's okay. because ultimately they still want a second opinion. They still want someone's eyes, another perspective on what they're doing. So they might like to handhold their financial situation. They just want a third party objective opinion. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, some people prefer to be completely hands off. Some people want to be really involved.
So you mentioned earlier about interviewing. Mm-hmm. How many financial planners do you recommend that do I interview?
I would say at least three. I think it's good to meet with at least three, whether they're local or not. I mean, the beauty of the world we live in today is you don't have to have geographical boundaries. You know, you could, I work with clients all over the country, and you could meet with someone that's, you know, a family friend that you know, and they're in California. But if you have a great rapport with them, if your personalities fit, and they can check some of the boxes of the questions that you're prepared to ask them, then I think that's ultimately all that matters. But I would suggest three.
So what are some of those questions that I should be asking?
You know, again, I'll kind of go back to the fiduciary standard. You want to make sure that they truly are a fiduciary and that they can answer that question. And maybe even they know what that means. because anybody can say yes to something. You want to make sure that they can actually define that. Some of the big ones, and we'll have a list of questions that I can provide for you guys, but some of the good ones, in my opinion, are they engaged in another business? You know, are they a partner, affiliated with some other company, or are they truly focused on being financial planners? I think that's a really important one. I think finding out about their planning credentials and designations, the types of services that they offer, and then also if they're willing to give you things like an agreement, a service agreement that describes the relationship you're going to have with them, the work that they're going to do for you, and a clearly defined way that they're going to be compensated. I think that's really important to understand and to have transparency in that realm.
What are the ways that planners are compensated?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's typically, we can kind of put them in two buckets. So it's either via a fee or a commission. In today's world, I think commission advisors are not as common because people want that transparency. So we're getting that question more and more. And so then when we're talking about a fee-based advisor, it opens up a multitude of ways that they could charge. They could charge a percentage of the portfolio, like a 1% advisory fee, which is fairly standard in our industry. They could charge an hourly rate or an annual, you know, retainer type rate.
If a person says that they're on commission, they're going to make a commission on any of the products that they invest your money in, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So, John, my wife and I have interviewed three different financial planners. How will we know which one is the right one for us?
Well, you know, I think that, again, I'll go back to that personality fit. You know, you really want to make sure that you connect with them on a level that's more than just feeling like, oh, okay, they understand the quantitative side of this. Because at the end of the day, in my opinion, any financial planner who has any of these designations should understand that part. But I think there's a whole nother element to this, the qualitative side, the you know, planning for your life's passions and what you enjoy. That person has to understand that, because that's, to me, that's what financial planning is. It's not just all numbers and math based. And so that connection with an advisor, in my opinion, is really important. And at the end of the day, I mean, trust. You know, we often have to lead with our gut, and we pray about the decisions we make. And I think if you feel like you know, if you question somebody or there's not a trust there, you probably know you should move on.
And how important is it that both are there, the husband and the wife? Because the majority of the time, the husband or the wife handles the finances in the house and the other individual. Not that they don't care, but they're not involved. So how important for you that both of them are there? Do they have a buy-in?
Yeah, it's very critical. I mean, even if one member of the household takes the financial role and the other does other things, I still think it's just so important, because we have all these life transitions that we go through, right? I mean, whether it's retirement, a career change, growing a family, those are things that the husband and the wife are both massively involved in. And every element of your life has some implication of financial decisions around it. I mean, whether it's as little as going to Lowe's and deciding how, you know, what you're going to do with home upgrades, or choosing a financial planner and putting your money in places that are going to optimize your financial life, that, how could you ignore that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it wouldn't even be fair for one spouse to say, well, you take care of this part and go hire the financial planner. I think it's massively critical.
One of the things that Evelyn and I experienced when we picked financial planner, one of the very first things that they asked us, well, what kind of risk tolerance do you have? You know, that's always, for us, been kind of an issue because Evelyn is majorly conservative and I'm not quite so much, although the older I get, the more conservative I think I want to be. But tell us about how, as a couple, why that's an important topic to discuss and how it affects your investments.
Yeah, the first thing I will say when it comes to risk tolerance, I think we see this a lot in our industry where based on age and time horizon, oftentimes people are kind of put into this box of, oh, okay, so you have this many years left, so this is how much risk you should have in your portfolio. And I don't think anybody likes being told that, because just because you might fit into that situation doesn't mean that's your risk profile, that's your risk preference.
Right.
And so when you have a situation where a husband and wife are on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to what we're doing, I think there's a lot of conversations that go into it. And I don't think it's fair to say, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll invest your 401ks and IRAs one way and we'll invest hers another way. There is a blending of that, but ultimately you guys do need to come together and decide, okay, we're moving together through life. We're walking together through life. And part of this is making sure that we're investing properly too. And we have these assets that will be here for us. So having that mutual understanding, in my opinion, a good financial planner can help facilitate that conversation and ultimately come up with a middle ground or something that makes sense from a risk standpoint.
Now, this is the strategy you're talking about.
Sure.
So how do you come up with that middle ground that you're going to satisfy both of the individuals?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I think we go through a litmus test of different things, whether it's how much cash do we have on hand, depending on the scenario and where you are in your life. You know, some people might have 3 to 6 months worth of cash emergency. If you're in retirement, and I don't know what, you know, the numbers that you guys talk about, but if you're in retirement, you might have as much as a year worth of cash on the sidelines. So it even starts there, right? Determining how much cash do we want to have on hand? Where are we maximizing and optimizing the monies that we're adding to, whether it's a 401k or an IRA? And so it's a long conversation that takes numerous meetings before we ultimately land on, okay, you guys should have a 60-40 portfolio. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's done over a series of meetings.
So I'm in my late 20s, early 30s. Sure. I come in to see you. We talk about a strategy. As I get older, does the strategy change?
Goodness, yeah. It's never a set it and forget it, because life is just ever evolving and changing as you're getting older too. And so that's when we work with clients, we say often we're going to meet periodically throughout the year, because if we waited 5 years to meet with you again, the number of things that could happen and change. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating, because it could be life transitions like we talked about. It could be something that happened that affected your perspective on risk. Think back to 2008. And how that impacted people in retirement. If they were close to or had just retired in 2008 and their portfolios dropped anywhere from 30 to 40 or even 50%, I guess, depending on how they were invested, boy, that's going to have a material impact on the decisions that they make. Mm-hmm. So working with a good financial planner in that time to help guide them through those decisions is really important.
You know, you mentioned having a cash portion of your portfolio. Mm. And this is something that we advocate for all of our listeners. It starts out as a $1,000 emergency fund, and then that emergency fund grows. And hopefully at some point in their life, let's just put it that way. I don't know by when that varies by person, but you know, you get up to maybe 6 months or 8 months or even a year. Personally, Evelyn and I actually have 24 months of what we consider to be a cash portfolio, so that we're protected if the market drops, because now we're fixed income. You know, that's our paycheck comes out of our savings account, so or our investment account, in my mind, protects us against any downturn mm-hmm. that occurs in the market. I don't think there's ever been a down market that lasted 24 months, you know, so that prevents us from having to sell investments at a reduced rate because the market has dropped drastically. So we're just using cash at a, basically at a one-to-one level. Does that make sense? And how do you figure out what to do with that?
I think it makes a whole lot of sense. And honestly, we talk all the time about focusing on what we can control as opposed to focusing on what we cannot control. So in the transition that you're in, you're talking about making sure you've got enough in your portfolio that's in cash that's not going to be impacted by stock market volatility. And to me, that's so critical because so many people, I feel like we're worrying about the wrong things. The things we can control are how much we're saving, how much we have in reserve, as opposed to, okay, well, is, you know, stock X over stock Y going to yield us more over this period of time? I think it's looking at it the wrong way. Looking back, I don't know that there's been a 10-year period where the markets have ever been negative. And if we're looking at investing for the long term, let's not worry too much about market volatility. And having enough cash reserve is what allows you to do that.
You also hear the term or the phrase, be fully invested. I think some people, when they hear me say, well, I've got 2 years of cash, that I'm not fully invested. What is fully invested, and how does that play in to a strategy for long-term sustainability? I want to be able to make sure that when I retire at 65, my money's still, I'm still going to have some, hopefully, when I'm 90 or 95 or whatever. So how does that all work?
Yeah, I suppose being fully invested would be defining for your situation what that appropriate allocation should be. And again, it changes over time, but what that appropriate allocation should be, and then sticking to it, making sure you're doing the rebalancing that needs to happen. I think that in the situation that you and Evelyn talked about, that's what makes sense for you. And in my opinion, you're fully invested, right? I mean, that term is unique to the individual or to the couple, in my opinion. So I sort of think that it has more to do with, to your situation, are you allocated correctly?
So that allocation that you're talking about is what helps to ensure that you're still going to have money left,
sure,
you know, 10 years, 15, 20 years down the road. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I think some people get a little bit afraid when they think about, hey, if I'm 85 years old, I don't want any of my money invested. But really, they need to have their money invested. Tell us about why that's important.
Well, I think when it comes to the stock market or equities, anything that's considered more risk on, at the end of the day, that's ultimately what, over a long period of time, can grow the portfolio. So you've got more conservative investments and more aggressive investments that you can choose from. And as you move on this scale towards retirement, or once you're in retirement, obviously you want to make sure that you're diversified, you don't have all of your eggs in one basket, and you have the appropriate balance of risk on and risk off. But you still do need to have some element of risk on, because we're in a time frame right now where it's really hard to generate yield in a bond portfolio or in cash. And so, you know, I think making sure you've got the right mix between those two is what's really important for someone's situation. You know, I got to say, I think that I saw this report on CNBC last week. And so the report was basically, in the last 10 years, the percentage of fund managers that are undershooting the benchmark over a 10-year period of time.
So what does that mean, undershooting the benchmark?
So basically, investing in, if someone were to invest in just the benchmark or the index, so like a large cap index, let's say the S&P 500, what this report was suggesting was that 85% of active managers are underperforming in a 10-year period, that benchmark. And so we talked to a lot of clients about, okay, well, from an allocation standpoint, that risk on side of the portfolio, so let's pretend a 60-40, 60% risk on and equities, 40% fixed income and risk off is what makes sense for someone's circumstance. We'd rather focus on more passive, low cost, and transparent investing vehicles. We want you to know what you're in, right? And I think going back to everything that you said before, that for you guys, that two-year mark that you have in cash, that allows you to quote unquote stay fully invested during periods of market volatility, so that you're not running for the hills and hiding from the stock market. You know, everybody wants to buy low and sell high,
right?
But we all, that investor psychology 101, we oftentimes end up doing the opposite.
Yeah.
We end up doing the exact complete opposite of what we, you know, what we say we're going to do, because it gets really scary when the markets are volatile.
Yeah, when they are volatile, I'm sure you get more phone calls from clients. Are they overreacting? I mean, and how do you, I don't want to use the word persuade them to stay true to the strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're overreacting. I think a lot of this is news-driven events, right? So what happens when you're reading the headlines can often scare people. But in my opinion, it's just, and this all goes back to, do you have the right financial advisor on your side?
Okay.
Are they over communicating to you during those periods of time? Are they talking to you about risk? Did you maybe know even before that market volatility happened what could happen in your portfolio? Like, those what if scenarios are really, really critical to talk through. And to me, that's part of the litmus test of making sure you're working with a good advisor, is they've prepared you mentally and emotionally and prepared the portfolio in terms of the allocations and how it's invested for a situation just like that one.
No, I think it's important. That's something you said a few minutes ago, sure, because I think sometimes people have the impression is, I hire a financial advisor and I'm done. He's going to handle my money. I'm going to become rich. But you talked about meeting on a frequent basis, and it's that type of meetings where you communicate these type of things,
yeah,
what could happen, the potential that's out there.
Yeah, well, and not only that, but I think meeting on a frequent basis with an advisor, it uncovers a lot of different areas and things that are happening financially in someone's life that you maybe didn't even think to talk to an advisor about. I mean, it could be something as complex as Medicare. I mean, gosh, we all know as we approach 65, listen, no one in their mid-30s enjoys talking about Medicare more than I do. I think it's just such a fun topic. But it's because it's such a confusing topic. There's not a lot of education out there. You get a bunch of stuff in the mail and you're left to your own devices to read through that stuff. And so being prepared to have those conversations, I think, are really important. Social Security and taxes.
So having a conversation is, I want to buy a car.
Sure.
So you're the kind of guy I can go to, and because you're handling my money, you know what I can and can't afford.
Well, yeah, I think a good financial planner's job is to be able to provide perspective on that situation. If I know how much you're saving to all the different vehicles that you should be saving to, if you're on track or not based on your plan for retirement, that will certainly determine or dictate how much of a down payment should go into this car. What type of car should we maybe be buying? Are we buying a car that's 2 or 3 years used, or are we trying to buy a brand new vehicle? You know, I mean, those are really important conversations as well.
John, do you get involved in their expenses that you may think they're overspending in certain areas? Do you ever?
All the time. I think it's funny you ask that, because I think years ago the concept was, well, as long as we worry about what they're saving, right, as a percentage of somebody's income, as long as we know what that percentage is that they're saving and that number meets the goal that we set for them, then great. And we just leave everybody alone with expenses. But as I found is, the more and more we work with clients on expenses, we uncover things that they didn't know, which I know sounds silly, but I mean, yeah, you guys probably see this all the time. Yeah. You know, you go through an expense sheet. Yep. A lot of people just want to ignore that. They don't like looking at their expenses. It's hard work. It feels like hard work. And so we go through this with clients and they go, gosh, you know, I had no idea how much we were spending on restaurants and dining. Or I had no idea how much we were spending on all of our different various types of insurance that we have. You know, should we be consolidating that stuff? So
a good financial advisor will run through that information with them as well. Their life insurance, whether you're under or over insured.
Yeah. And I think a good financial advisor should have a team of people to help with that, right? So perhaps they don't My guess would be most financial planners aren't going to have the
money. I never had the money
to,
in terms of the property
assets. That's
insurance,
something I get a lot
auto insurance
as examples.
You know what? What has my industry done
wrong?
Have,
you know, somebody
that
good
the assumption
that
they can
is you
refer
for that situation
and money to work
or at least
a
have the
planner.
Capacity
just,
to read
craziness.
Through that and understand.
I think the earlier you start,
oh, okay,
I mean,
here
you guys know
here's
this,
your coverage,
you preach this,
and maybe you're paying
you
a little bit too much.
Easier
what,
it is.
If you have someone that you work with,
the savings
percentages
back
that you need to commit to
be
prepared for retirement
and
whatever that looks like for somebody.
So go back to the original questions that John and I threw out.
Starting at 25 years old.
When do you go out and seek a financial planner advisor?
Right now.
So like,
no, I mean it.
So I know you get out of college the first day you get a job.
Yeah.
So you're not going to find somebody that says, no, you don't have enough money to invest.
Sure. Exactly. I think the thing that gets me is when I meet with people who are in their 50s or 60s and it's the first time that they've ever worked with a financial planner. And that the reason is, well, I never had the money. In terms of the assets, that's something I get a lot. And I think, gosh, what has my industry done wrong that the assumption is you have to have investable money to work with a financial planner? That's craziness. I think the earlier you start, I mean, you guys know this and you guys certainly preach this. The earlier you start, the easier it is. Mm-hmm. The savings percentages that you need to commit to be prepared for retirement and whatever that looks like for somebody is much, much easier if they're starting at 25 years old versus 35.
That is one piece of advice that we do repeat over and over. You start saving for retirement on the first day of your very first job. John F. Kennedy, thank you so much. John is a financial planner here in Central Florida at Candor Path. For John, Bean, and myself, thank you so much for listening. And remember, we have a brand new podcast for you each and every Wednesday morning, bright and early. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down on the homepage, click on the button that says podcast. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're from Compass Catholic Ministries.